Hello, this is the Inside College Hockey podcast for Wednesday, October 29th, 2008. Thank you for listening. My name is Joe Vladishevsky, ECAC Hockey senior writer and Inch podcast host. We've got a full staff on board tonight to talk college hockey for the next hour or so. We'll start with the podcast debut of the 2008-2009 season of our Hockey East correspondent, Jeff Howe. Hello, Jeff.
Wait, I thought I called into the Inside Professional Basketball Podcast. Is this the wrong room here?
Yeah, it is.
Are you still a little later then?
Still a little affected by the Celtics celebrations?
Yeah, that was a fun night, I'll tell you. I was happy to be a part of that. I've never been a part of something like that, but that was pretty cool.
What, last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, corny.
You went to UMass and you've never been part of a championship celebration? Weird.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. And with that,
you're getting nasty already.
Jess Myers, WCHA correspondent. Hello, Jess.
I'm a veteran of many, many championship parades in Minnesota Duluth, so.
Yeah.
Hold on, Jess. Before we go any further, when I was there, my senior year, UMass was the number one most violent school in the country. So I think we should chill out with the championships here.
Yeah. I'll back up. I did offer to tutor for Marcus Camby one year, but I was turned down.
There you go. Now we'll hit the middle of the country, and we'll talk to James V. Dowd, CCHA senior writer. Hello, James.
I'm really enjoying the Cubs' 100-year celebration of not winning the World Series right now.
There you go. 100 years. And finally, Inch columnist and editor Mike Eidelbus. Mike, what's your championship status?
When I was at Michigan State, we raised a few banners. Of course, they were immediately set on fire.
Well, you shouldn't have tacked them to the back of a couch.
Yeah, then there you go.
All right, lots to talk about in college hockey, but we're not interested in much of it, so we're going to talk about an issue that has come into play this season and is starting to be applied practically across the nation, specifically in the CCHA, and those are shootouts to determine results of games after they are tied after 65 minutes of play. It's a CCHA issue for now, but let's face it, it's not going away, and I think with a lot of certainty we can expect that this is going to be pretty common throughout college hockey. It's just a matter of how conferences or the NCAA as an umbrella organization will apply it. James, you were at Michigan State on Friday, and the Spartans and Northern Michigan Wildcats played to a tie and then resolved the game in a shootout. What were your, I guess, immediate thoughts? How was the arena? How did the fans respond to it? And I'll just start there.
I guess first and foremost, it was a big weekend for Michigan State football, so the attendance generally was kind of poor. But the one moment when the fans really got into it and really got excited was when they got to the shootout. And I think from the perspective of trying to get the fans into it and find a more exciting conclusion, it certainly did that. It got everybody on their feet, especially because Michigan State won, but then you still got to wonder about the consequences of it over a 28-game conference season. You know, in one night, I think it was very exciting. It was achieved its goal. Somebody went home the winner, although I won't exactly admit that. And now we just got to see how it plays out the rest of the year.
There have actually been three CCHA conference games who have already gone to a shootout this year. At this rate, it'll be a lot of so-called bonus points in the standings. One thing that I noticed is that they've got a challenge on their hands with how they actually present the standings, because if they're going to a four-column format with wins, losses, ties, and then shootout wins. So Michigan State has 4 points out of their weekend against Northern Michigan, but their record reads as 1-0-1-1, which kind of looks like three or kind of looks like five. I mean, that's one of the challenges they'll face. And
yeah,
you could end up having a team where if you just gave them a straight win for that shootout win, but since it counts as a tie in the overall standings for NCAA tournament criteria, that you have more league wins than overall wins. So that's something that they're going to have to figure out, and another issue that comes up with all this.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, just taking a glance at it when you get the weekly releases and whatnot, it takes a minute to digest it, and it's, you know, you look at a team like Ohio State's played a couple more games than Michigan State, but, you know, 1-2, 1-1, and 1-0, 1-1, and, you know, it's just going to be a little bit hard to digest, so it's something they're going to have to work out. But like you said, right now, you don't really have more conference wins than overall.
Jess, you talked to some coaches around the nation in your WCHA notebook this week about where they stand on the shootout, and it came to pass a little bit with a pretty prominent series that happened over the weekend where Colorado College traveled to Clarkson here in my part of the country. And they played two games, two nationally ranked teams, and both ended in a tie. What was Scott Owen's reaction on that?
Well, first, my thought was, you know, you travel all that way. Don't you want to at least, you know, get some kind of definitive results to your games? Scott Owen said he was absolutely fine with it. You know, he said it makes no sense to play 65 minutes of great hockey on the road, forage a tie, and then, you know, bring it down to, you know, maybe losing in a shootout where you go home feeling like you lost when really you didn't play like you lost.
I don't think there was a problem with that. I mean, I'm looking at those scores on Friday night and Saturday night, and I say, you know what, that's a good game. Both teams had power play chances. Both teams had good goaltending. Pops a couple goals here and there, and it's probably deserved, you know, a point apiece. I wasn't clamoring for a resolution. I was, you know, I thought it was probably deserved.
It's interesting, James talks about that CCHA game. The best quote I've seen so far of the coaches who are opposed to the idea of a shootout, and there are plenty of them, but I saw Walt Kyle a month ago. He was here in Minnesota scouting some kids. He said, it's gimmicky, was the word he used, and he said, I'm all for breaking ties, but why don't we do it by playing hockey?
Yeah, you'll get a lot of those arguments from the traditionalists or purists or what have you. I'm not a big shootout fan myself. I think people like them. One of the other positives for college hockey coaches, the players really like it. You know, it could present a recruiting advantage to a kid who may be deciding between a CCHA school or a program in another conference. You know, you can offer them that nugget. You can say, hey, you know what? You've got great hands. You've got great skill. We like what you do in junior. You know, you'll be a part of our shootouts if you come to our institution.
I think that's a pretty valid point there. Just having talked to the Michigan State guys after it, and obviously they were on the winning end of it, and so they're going to be pretty excited to win on their home ice, their CCHA home opener. But the guys were all talking about, hey, this is the first time we've done it since juniors. I really enjoy it. Some of the guys that are juniors and seniors, you know, even Jeff Lurg, it was something that excited him. Matt Shepke had a chance to score a goal. And, you know, they talked about that, how it was something that they really had missed from playing in juniors because it gives them a chance to showcase their skills, either as a goalie or on the breakaway.
I think I kind of have to go with Walt Kyle and side with his assessment that it is gimmicky. I mean, and I know we've brought this subject up in the past, especially last season, later in the season, when it looked like this shootout thing was going to become a reality, at least in the CCHA. And, you know, there's nothing, I don't have anything wrong with a game finishing in a tie. I don't think that, you know, I think that, you know, you think of instances where a team has gone on the road and escaped with a tie, and that can feel like a win. You know, the same thing goes, you know, for a game maybe that you're up 3-1 and you end up giving up two late goals and tying, and, you know, for the team that squandered the lead, that ends up feeling like a loss. You know, I just think the shootout is real artificial. you know, it's been in the NHL, I think now is the third year, and you're already kind of seeing some of the novelty wear off there. And I just think that the shelf life on the shootout is real limited, and I just think that the negatives are far outweigh the positives.
I'm okay with it at the National Hockey League level.
I am too. I'm okay with it, but I think that, you know, it's kind of lost its luster.
I think that's the best point that's been brought up so far that you just brought up, Bus, is the fact that if you've got a big late season home and home or a two-game series between two of the top teams in your league standings, and let's say it's a home and home, I'll use Northeastern UNH this weekend for example, and there are no shootouts in Hockey East because they play real hockey on this side of the country. But if Northeastern goes up to UNH and gets a tie, it, like you said, that in essence feels like a win because they're taking a point away from UNH's building, and UNH only gets that 1 point, whereas if UNH or Northeastern goes up there and they play into overtime and then go to the shootout and UNH wins the shootout, then yeah, Northeastern gets to that point, but UNH is still picking up the extra point. And that just, it doesn't give the team as much of a chance to take an extra sense of momentum, at least going down the home stretch or early in the early stretch of the season right now, because you're squandering or you're giving up an extra point that you probably shouldn't have given up because of the quirky gimmick.
Another idea that's been tossed around is making all games on a three-point system, so that a regulation win is worth 3 points to zero, then an overtime or shootout win would be 2 points to the winner and one to the loser.
I guess I have a problem with, you know, not to doubt Walt Kyle, because he's obviously won a few more games as a college coach than I have, but calling it a gimmick. I guess I have a problem with that in the simple fact that this isn't a new thing. What was it? The 92 Olympics, the gold medal game was decided by a shootout. I mean, it's not like it just came around and it's something we're trying a couple of years, you know, like the glowing puck that Fox had. This has been a part of hockey for better or worse for, you know, well over a decade now. Scott Owens made that point to me. He said he knows all about shootouts. He coached in the USHL 10 years ago, and they were using them at that level then to settle games.
Yeah, true, but how many games were they playing in the USHL?
Well, a lot more than the 28 conference games that you play in college hockey.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And that, I think that gets to the, and I don't think it's a gimmick as much as, obviously it's not a gimmick because it's been in the game and it's used on, you know, just about every level of hockey routinely. I think that there's just, more or less, it seems like the only word that I can think of to describe it is, it just seems artificial, like a real arbitrary, artificial way to decide games. And yeah, I know it's not because you got a goalie in there and you got a shooter and, you know, it's one-on-one and, you know, somebody wins and somebody loses, but it seems so kind of made for TV or something, you know, I just really don't. It's kind of like a setup ending, you know, like somebody's scripting it.
George Gwozdecki made that point about the you know, kind of artificial, like you said, way of ending it. He made the point that you play a team game with, you know, six against six for 65 minutes, and then all of a sudden it becomes an individual skills game for the last 3 minutes. And, you know, does that make sense?
I mean, that's exactly what, when I talked to Tom Anastas before the season started, he was talking about how, you know, it really doesn't cheapen the victory. It really isn't gimmicky because you're taking, like, a goalie portraying, like, portraying the skills that he's best at and a forward doing that. But having seen the shootout in person, like I said, it was exciting. It brought a lot of energy into the building. I agree with all of you guys that it seems to kind of cheapen it a bit. Like, that game was a really even game, and there were good things that Michigan State did, and there were good things that Northern Michigan did, but they kind of came out in a wash. But when you were leaving the building, you really felt like Michigan State won, and whether or not Walt Kyle is going to admit it, he said, y'all, you know, we tied the game, they got a bonus point for being good at breakaways. I really think that, you know, I really think it felt like Northern Michigan lost that game. And, you know, as a team that's looking to make a step into the top four of the CCHA, that can be a kind of devastating thing when that's a big rivalry game that they put a lot of stock in, I think.
I have
just pulled up the 07-08 standings here.
I was going to... Can I interject
go
once?
Ahead, boss. Go ahead.
I was at an NHL game last year, and this kind of parallels what this same situation from this past weekend. About a year ago, I was at Red Wings game where they played the Capitals, and you know it was late in the game, about a minute, less than a minute left, as a matter of fact, and Detroit's winning by a goal, and the Capitals managed to score one and tie the game up, goes into overtime. Ends as a tie in overtime, and Detroit goes and wins the shootout, so, you know, therefore gets the extra point. And, you know, it just, you know, you'd end up with this with the same argument of this artificial nature, and, you know, Detroit should have felt like they lost the game, giving up a goal in the last minute of the third period, but yet they, you know, they end up... holding on in overtime and winning the shootout. I think it's just kind of backwards. It's just kind of a backwards approach to the process.
Yeah, I think also just having been around the Michigan State people as well, they're a team that struggled to get shots off those first few games, and they started to make some steps towards being better. But their attitude after the game was as though they won. It wasn't, you know, just, you know what, we should have done better against Northern Michigan. We should have done better at this. It was like, you know, this was really positive. Like, we, you know, it seemed like they felt like they won the game. And maybe it's something they need to be looking at internally and saying, hey, you know what, like, we might have won the shootout, but we still got a lot to work on if we're not convincingly beating Northern Michigan on our own ice.
Pulled up the 2007-2008 standings, and one of the things I took a look at, each conference, which team had the most ties. Mercyhurst and Atlantic Hockey had 7 ties last year, which was 29 points. If they go 5-2 in those shootouts and get 5 extra points, they can move up from 5th in the league to 2nd or 3rd, you know. Boston College had 7 ties last year. You think they'd be favored in pretty much every shootout they went into?
Every single one.
Every single one. Minnesota, 7 ties with 55 points. If they go 4-3 in those shootouts, they go from 7th to 4th in the WCHA. You know, so the sample size is too small, and that's my contention with it. You can't give out a bunch of extra points based on tie games and shootouts because you're only playing somewhere between 22 and 30 conference games. That's the problem that I have with it.
Yeah.
And I think it was Seth Aperbus who said we should have them to determine tiebreakers.
Yes, that's exactly what he said.
You keep them on file. People get they get the excitement and they get the deal. And especially in ECAC hockey, where you only play a 22-game conference schedule, which is the fewest of any of the conferences. But if it comes down to a tiebreak system at the end of the year for a position, then you can bring the shootout records into play. And I think that's sensible, and I think that makes sense. Because then you're not worried about one breakaway contest in one game determining an entire point in the standings. You're worried about 22-game season, okay, these two teams are still tied. You know, after all of that stuff, then we go into the shootouts.
Yep,
and then it's aggregates.
Wins.
Yeah. So I think that is probably the proposal or idea that I'm most in favor of.
From a writing standpoint, they really stink.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're writing on deadline. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's like everything changes in the span of 10 seconds.
In terms of real issues that other people care about, though, Jess, just kind of building on Gladdy.
Come on, it affects 0.00001% of the people who watch hockey.
You're right. That phone call that you just had at your house rep in, affected everybody who was listening to this point podcast.
That was Tom and
I didn't answer it.
Dare
it
you. Over there.
But anyway, no, just what you were saying, Gladdy, about BC being favored to win every single shootout, and then kind of mixing that in with something I said earlier. I mean, let's say Merrimack or one of the lower teams in Hockey East goes out and plays a great 60 minutes of hockey, and they come away with a tie against a team like BC. Anytime, if a Merrimack or a Providence or any team that's having a down year goes out and ties BC, whether it's at home or on the road, that feels like a victory for that team. But if they go into a shootout with BC, they don't stand a chance in the world to take that point away from Boston College. I mean, let's be serious. They might get a fluky win here or there, maybe a good bounce, or you know, like a John Muse can't deflect the puck into his own net. But there is no way that the manpower of a Merrimack or a UMass or a Providence or somebody like that could really hang with a Boston College or a Boston University or a New Hampshire.
Right. You're 100% correct on that.
So how do we do it better? 10-minute overtime?
I like that.
I would agree. I think a 10-minute overtime is workable. I mean, you're really not talking about attacking, you know, making the games overly long, and, you know, if a 10 ends after after that as a tie, then so be it. You know, there really is nothing wrong with a tie.
That's the other thing.
What's wrong with a tie?
I'm okay with it. You know, I bet that a lot of the people who walked out of Chiel Arena on Friday and Saturday night said, you know what, I saw a pretty good hockey game tonight. I saw Colorado College and Clarkson. Those teams could both end up in the NCAA tournament, and I enjoyed that. My $15 or whatever it was to get in the building, it was worth it. I was entertained on a Saturday night.
You know, adding in those 5 extra minutes really wouldn't add on any time. If you think about what you have to do logistically for a shootout, if you're just playing a 10-minute overtime with no break in it, when you bring in the shootout, you bring in the Zamboni, then you account for any tricks that the home team Zamboni driver's trying to pull and going back out and correcting them. Like, you're already talking about the game could be over if you were playing that extra 5 minutes.
Zamboni shenanigans?
I was watching a game and the New York Rangers play, and they brought the guy back out because whoever they were playing against said the coach was like, hey, he didn't, he's not doing the spot like to, I think, Valakut.
The scrape wasn't good.
Yeah. Well, he said they skipped a spot to Valakut. It was in for Lundqvist that night, and they skipped a spot to his left so that they would have some difficulty cutting over that way, so... by that time, you're adding in another couple of minutes. When that circles around, comes all the way back out, why not add on 5 minutes? And really,
well, detractors of the 10-minute overtime are cite that the ice conditions would become so poor that it would really take all the skill out of it.
That's okay.
Because you're looking at a 30-minute period.
Yeah, that's true. All right,
I don't know. I'm all right with it.
Yeah.
I am too.
You want another idea? I got another idea.
Okay.
And you'll laugh now, but 10 years from now when it's known as the Meyer shootout, we'll see. How about, because here's what I like about the shootout.
I'm already laughing, Jeff. You don't have to.
You know, and I agree with Buss about the artificial nature of it. I like shootouts from a fan standpoint. They're fun. My kids love them, but... I agree with Buss about the artificial nature of it because it's just forwards against goalies. So how about this idea? 2 forwards, 1 defenseman, 1 goalie. So instead of just a shooter going against the goalie, it's a 2-on-1. That way you involve your defenseman. If you're a strong defensive team, maybe you have a little bit more of an advantage.
So you're thinking you put a shot clock
on? You can get
on?
Some... It's still just one shot. Brings in some strategy. Does the defenseman take the guy with the puck? Does he lay back? Yeah. If you got 2 forwards out there, do they pass the puck or do you just let the speediest one with the best shot? Yeah.
They could be out there for a minute.
Or maybe put like a 15-second shot clock on it. That's not a bad idea.
I think that's your thing. Then you can get a rebound chance. You can get the other guy to crash the net.
Yeah.
So now it's the Gladys shootout.
It's a little bit. It's a little bit more like actual hockey.
Yeah, it's a little bit of hockey in there.
How about actual hockey?
Shootout.
I don't know.
Nah, it just takes too long.
I like the 4-on-4.
I do
too. 5 minutes.
That's pretty good.
I think. And one of the things actually that I had read somewhere about something was that one of the proposals that the coaches' associations talked about in Naples was that the first 5 minutes is 5-on-5, the second 5 minutes is 4-on-4, and then it's a tie. And I like that too.
I like that too.
Period. If you're going with 10-minute period, that one works for me.
I would take either of those, and I don't want to minimize that fans like shootouts, because obviously fans are, you know, fans are an important part of the game, but I don't think it's a justification for putting a rule in is that, well, fans want to see a winner and a loser, fans like shootouts.
Well,
why would you do it in the American Hockey League or in the Atlantic Hockey League then?
Why what?
Why would you do shootouts in the Atlantic Hockey League if it's all about the fans?
Oh, because there's no fans?
Right. Just
maybe saying. Maybe they'll bring more people in. All of a sudden, AIC sells out. Bentley sells
out. But Gladys, you made this point last year. You want to bring fans in, bring fighting back. I mean, what really gets fans charged up? Let's be honest.
I know.
In a podcast we did last year, I remember you said that. Instead of a shootout, put your two toughest guys at center ice.
That would be awesome.
if we could.
That's the Gladys shootout.
Yeah, that would be.
One thing that would
punch out
back is if you just dispersed the North Dakota Ice Girls across the entire country. I mean,
there you go. How about.
Maybe we should have them fight.
How about this?
Ooh.
Okay.
Fans also like overtime goals. You know, we keep talking about shootouts, but if you go to that 10 minutes and your team pops one, you know, that's pretty exciting too. And
yeah, the roof will come off a place like Yosermon
it's not contrived. It's actual good deal. So, yeah, there's a lot out there about it. I think the recruiting angle is going to be something to keep an eye on. James, let's talk a little bit about Michigan State's guy, because he's a unique story, and Spartan coach Rick Comley talked about it. He said as far back as early in the fall when they had the CCHA media day, but Michigan State's got a guy named Kurt Cavisto who is certainly considered to be not among their top 6 forwards, or maybe even their top 10 forwards, but gets in the games. You know, he's been a regular, hasn't put up much in terms of numbers, and I'll get those. But he's a guy who had a lot of shootout experience at the junior hockey level, and he's obviously great at it. And they do their breakaway drills every day in practice or every week in practice, and he was their first shooter on Friday night and managed to score to go up.
Not only that, when they were telling the story afterwards, how did you pick your shooters? How did you do this? And Rick Comley said, you know, I really wasn't to the point where I was that comfortable with how the protocol for running it would be. And he turned to Kurt Cavisto and said, do we want to shoot first or not? And Cavisto said, oh, absolutely. We've always got to shoot first, like in the NHL, the home team does. Turned out to be a good decision for him. But, yeah, just looking at his numbers, he played in one game his freshman year, 14 his sophomore, 28 his junior year, you know. So he's a guy who played somewhat regularly last year, but not every night. And he is somebody that brings energy in practice, can be a leader there. But, yeah, he just has this ability to score. And if you could score on Jeff Lurie in practice, then you've got to be doing a pretty good job. And you know, it's really changed the focus of their lineup. He had, over his first 3 years, like I said, 43 games, one goal, one assist, only 2 points. He's not a huge offensive force by any means, but as long as he's got that skill, if you put him, you put him in the lineup every night, and then you're going to see, you know, for every game that he's in because of that, somebody else is out. And, you know, it's just one more additional consideration for who are going to be your healthy scratches.
Yeah, with 2 points in essentially 50 career games, he'd only have to play about 300 seasons to catch Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, no, he you know, he really brought, he really was you know, kind of the star of the game in a way. I mean, Shepke had a goal later on after that, and Jeff Lurie was you know, did absolutely great in the shootout. But you know, he was the guy who got out there first, who got the crowd into it. You know, there was a little bit of nervousness: are we going to succeed at this, or are we not? And so you know, he's all of a sudden gone from being a guy with, you know, like you said, 2 points in 50 games to being a really key contributor to that club this year.
Anything else on shootouts, fellas? We've managed to talk in enough circles on this subject and not provide any answers, so we'll leave it there.
I thought the answer was get rid of them. Oh, that's my answer. Never mind.
No, I think that's an answer. I think that's... Where does the Inch official statement on the matter come from? What's our platform?
We've got to put a plank in the platform.
I say we don't advocate for getting rid of them because, like them or not, it sounds like they're coming. I mean, I talked to Joe Britannia a couple weeks ago, and he said they're going to be the law of the land within a couple of years. So, like it or not, get used to it.
Our platform is use them as a tiebreaker method. Do not award extra points in the regular season standings. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that's our platform.
You didn't ask if anyone was opposed, but that's all right.
Well, I think it was.
I think we were unanimous.
Now let's do fighting.
And if we weren't, for those who weren't unanimous, now are.
Can we do fighting now?
No, we'll save that for a different podcast.
All right.
We do that every year at the Frozen Four after several beers, remember? Oh, you mean talk about fighting?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, Devils game tonight. I was watching Devils and Leafs. Chico Resch says, after a scrap, he goes, now what's more dangerous? Those you people out there who don't like fighting, is this more dangerous, or is Ryan Hollweg more dangerous? Good point, Glenn. Good point.
Well, they even pulled up a replay of that. I was watching that, too. They pulled it up, and they were like, oh, you know, look at this. After they went down to the ground, the referee pulled them away. No harm done, this, that, and, you know. Yeah. Well, they just had that hit the other day, though, right? Was it Sutter, the guy from Carolina? It was,
Devil's coach's son.
Against Doug Waite, right?
Doug Waite, yeah.
It was Doug Waite, yeah.
Doug Waite's a good Lake Superior State boy.
Were you roommates with Chico Resch at UMD, Jeff?
just for 1 year, but then he got caught drinking. Right? No, I'm kidding.
Chico was a freshman.
That's even
Jeff
a bad
was
joke.
A junior.
Chico is one of the most religious guys I know, so you know, to joke about him drinking isn't even really funny. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well.
All right. Thanks, Captain Bringdown.
Yeah.
I get the wet blanket award for the night.
Is Chico judging me? How about we talk about good news, and let's talk about teams who are off to good starts. Jess, we'll start with you and WCHA powerhouse Alaska Anchorage.
Yeah, great start for the Seawolves. Now, I'm tempering my excitement, and I would encourage all Seawolf fans to temper their excitement as well, because it's not yet Halloween, and they have a well-established record over the last two seasons or so of going solidly in the tank after about January 1st. But hey, you're on a fun ride. Enjoy it. I was amazed at this stat. The 3-0-1 streak that the Seawolves are currently on is the best four-game stretch that Dave Chiak has had in three seasons and change as their coach. So congratulations. Good luck at Michigan Tech this weekend. Good test. They have not been outside the state of Alaska, and Tech is their longest in-conference road trip, so we'll see how that affects the young Seawolves. But good on you for now.
James, you talked a little bit about the Nebraska-Omaha Mavericks. Again, a team that hasn't been on the road yet. Some people may snicker at their early season opposition, but sounds like they've got a new attitude and a new way of going about their hockey this season.
Yeah, they like I said, the notebook, I had a chance to talk with Mike Kemp this morning. He's a coach that I've always admired because, like I said, you know, they had Dan Ellis, and then how are they going to do after them? And then Scott Parse and Bill Thomas and Brian Marshall, and each generation, how are they going to do it? How are they going to do it? And they're never a team that really, with the exception of one or 2 years, really threatens at the top of the CCHA. But, you know, this summer when I talked to Coach Kemp, he was talking about, you know, we've got to take a more defensive attitude. We don't have those top-tier scoring guys, those guys that are going to put up numbers that will get them a mention for the Hobie Baker, if not, you know, an actual, like, you know, actually being in contention for it, but at least be mentioned as they're in the top scoring. And they wanted to focus more on the defense so far. They've stopped all 22 of their opponent's power plays. They've got some good production from a number of guys. Their power play has still been performing well. I think they just have really bought into the changes that Coach Kemp has made, and we'll see how they do this weekend at Bowling Green.
Nebraska-Omaha has 7 consecutive CCHA weekends. The next 7 weeks in a row, no time off. Doubleheader, doubleheader, doubleheader. The first two weekends are at Bowling Green for 2, at Western Michigan for 2, then they're home to Ferris and Michigan State, at Ohio State, and then Alaska, and then Lake Superior State comes in. So lots going on, and that's a big chunk of 14 conference games in a row. And this is the time where they've got to make some noise if they want a challenge for the standings. Rook, Northeastern.
They're good. Again, the second straight. Although, actually, they weren't that good in October last year. They were real good in November. But they're 5-0-1, second best start in school history. I wrote all about them today, so I know their numbers like a bad math test, I guess. But they've really, it's not surprising that they're off to such a good start because they are basically returning every significant player from last season. I mean, they lost Jimmy Russo to graduation, and then Chad Costello bounced early for his personal reasons, but everybody else who was on the team last year is back, and they're an extremely talented team. They've got a lot of younger players who can put the puck in the net, which, you know, in teams in Northeastern's past haven't really had more than one or even two guys you can consider offensive weapons. But, you know, they run, I would say, two lines deep, and I mean, even a third and fourth line. And the thing that they've always done well under Cronin, and I've said it so many times, is the fact that they're such a tough team to play. They really like to wear teams down. They're really physical. They're going to hit you and hit you and hit you for 60 minutes, and that's when they're at their best, because, you know, teams just don't like to hang with teams like that, especially a quicker, more swift or puck-moving team like Boston College or Boston University or a UNH. So their style really offsets a lot of the other teams and what they're able to do in Hockey East. And like I was saying a minute ago, they've brought in a lot more talent too, so they can hang with the better teams in Hockey East. Right now they're 4-0 for the first time in Hockey East play in school history, so it's a good start for them. Brad Deason is playing tremendous in net. His numbers are in the basically top 7 across the country in goals against and save percentage. He was a reason why last year they struggled a little bit, because he struggled a little bit and kind of lost confidence, and Cronin said that he kind of lost confidence, or I shouldn't say that Cronin lost confidence in him. He just, you know, he knew he wasn't playing well, but he knew that Thiessen would always work to get better. And right now Thiessen's at the top of his game. He's playing as well as any goaltender in the country. And I mean, this is a team that the coaches liked coming into the season. I think they were voted 4th in the preseason coaches poll, And they're a team that should definitely hang around for a while. They collapsed late last year, right around the Beanpot. I remember thinking that Northeastern had the team that could win the Beanpot. And right before then, they got a little cold, and then they lost 5 straight, 6 of 7 down the stretch, and then were routed up in Burlington, which is an extremely difficult place to play. So, I mean, they are banking on that experience from last year, and the one thing that I've been hearing from them since media day, basically, is that, you know, if they didn't learn anything from their experience last season, then shame on them, because they should be able to use that knowledge to their advantage this year. They should be able to bond together in tough situations, which are definitely going to arise in this tough league this year. So Northeastern's definitely not a flash in the pan, I would say, and they're a team that should definitely be around for, you know, all the way through the end of March, and maybe they're banking on it to April.
You know, so they were aspiring to be a top four Hockey East team, just not Boston University.
What's that?
They were aspiring to be a top four team, just not BU.
What about not BU?
Tanking after the Beanpot. And
oh, right, right, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
That's
better joke than you gave it credit for, Rook.
I agree.
Right over my head.
Yeah, mine too. You look at that conference, though, top to bottom. I think, you know, that's... I think that's you can pretty accurately say that Hockey East is the most competitive league.
They are.
I think it's the deepest league.
Definitely the deepest. Last year they were a little soft, and there was no question that the league last year was very. There was a ton of parity in Hockey East last year, but that's because the teams just weren't that good. This year, there really wasn't a lot of talent lost from last season's teams. And the league, from top to bottom, is, I would say, at least on paper, going into the season, this is the most talent that this league has had in the 5 years that I've covered it. And, you know, it starts up top with the defending national champion Eagles. And then BU is a far and away better team this year than they were last year. UNH could go as far as Brian Foster, and the developing offense takes them. And everybody else all the way down. I mean, I think Providence will struggle, and Merrimack is Merrimack, even though Merrimack is still a better team this year than they have been probably 3 or 4 years. But this is, I mean, from 3 to 8, because I expect BC and BU to finish 1-2, but from 3 to 8, I mean, there's no difference from 3 to 8, really. It's just going to be about consistency. And if, you know, a team like Northeastern can maintain a hot streak like this for, you know, 6 months, which is obviously unlikely.
UNH has to score some goals, man. Got to score some.
There's no question, but, I mean, Brian Foster has played very, very good hockey so far in net for UNH so far. He was a kid who came in, and you know, when Kevin Regan struggled like 3 years ago, when Foster came in, I thought that he would battle Regan for that starting job, and obviously, you know, Regan lit the world on fire after that, but it's not like Foster's any slouch. He's not some kid who was in there by default because Regan graduated. He's in there because he can play. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, he had a dud. I mean, I didn't see it in person. He let up 4 goals last weekend in a game. But other than that, he's been tremendous. I mean, 1 goal or a shutout every single game. So if he continues at that pace, there's no reason to think that while this UNH offense continues to develop, which we've seen them do every single season, you know, basically since Umili's been there, I mean, Foster is giving them a little time to figure things out. The thing that concerns me, though, is that he's had at least 30 saves in a game 4 times already. And for a team like UNH that has always had, you know, questions on defense, if they continue to give up 30 shots a game, I don't think you can continue to expect Brian Foster to stand on his head like that.
Yeah. They've got 5 total goals in their last 4 games. That's a little warning sign to me.
That's a little sluggish, but you take a team with Van Riemsdyk and... You know, guys of that, you know, obviously they don't have guys of that stature, you know, up and down the lineup, but starting with him and going, you know.
You're looking at Van Riemsdyk, you know, DeSimone, Collins, you know, these guys, but again, where's the production? I just, Rensselaer, one goal.
It's early.
UMass, one goal. St. Lawrence, one goal.
It's early.
I think they'll score.
I think they'll score. They always have in the past. I mean,
well,
you know, we always talk about that progression under Umilia that, you know, guys play roles as freshmen and they grow into bigger roles as, you know, as they get older.
Like a Bobby Butler or a Danny Dries, one of those guys
right.
is probably going to come out and score 20 goals this year. And they were role players their freshman years. They developed a little more last year. We were sitting here the same exact time last year wondering how they were going to get by without Hemingway and some of those other guys who graduated. I mean, it's a never-ending cycle at UNH. These guys continue to develop, and they become, you know, all-American type players by the time they're junior and senior. By the time they're juniors and seniors, Van Riemsdyk, I think, has to be the guy who can go out and score more goals. I think, and I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think he only has 2 goals so far this season. He's got a number of points because he's getting assists, but you would kind of look to a Van Riemsdyk to become that guy who can go out and can score a goal or two in those big games, and they're going to need him to do that. I mean, he was the number 2 pick in the draft last summer, and you want him to be able to be that guy who UNH brought in to be a stud.
Yeah, it's tough. Want to recognize a couple of teams who have accomplished some pretty great stats so far. Something I was looking at earlier this week. These are teams' penalty killing percentages and their shorthanded goals that they've scored. They are either even or plus while shorthanded on the season. Nebraska-Omaha, 22 out of 22 killed, and they have one shorty, so they're plus one. Colorado College, 43 out of 44 killed with a shorty, so they're even. St. Lawrence, same, 39 out of 40 with a shorty. Alaska, 32 out of 33 with a shorty. Colgate, 21 out of 22 with a shorty. And Northeastern, 36 out of 39 killed, but 3 shorthanded goals to offset the 3 they've allowed. You're going to win a lot of hockey games with those kinds of numbers. So, again, it's early, but good job by those teams.
I just want to say real quick, I was a little off. Van Riemsdyk has 3 goals and 2 assists. So he doesn't have just 2 goals, and he doesn't have a ton of points like I was giving him credit for, but 3 goals and 2 assists.
They've only got 10 goals on the season, so he's been a big factor in their offense.
That's 30%.
Oh, there's no doubt.
It's been a big factor. I guess in ECAC hockey territory, we'll send a wave and a raise of the stick to Union. They've... One thing that's been documented about Union is that they haven't won in the playoffs. And they've played more one-goal games and overtime games in the last 4 or 5 years in the ECAC hockey playoffs than any other team. And they just seem to always come out on the wrong end of these. And they played a 5 overtime game against Yale that they lost. And several years, their entire series went overtime 3 nights in a row. But they started their season with an exhibition game against the under-18s. Then they played at a tournament at Omaha and lost that championship game to the Mavericks. Then they played in the Governor's Cup at Albany. So they started their season with 4 tournament games, so to speak. And while that's not specifically related to what might happen in the postseason, what it does, it gives them important, meaningful games that they're contesting right away. Instead of, you know, lining up a bunch of Canadian universities for an exhibition or bringing in an Atlantic Hockey opponent for a home date on Parents Weekend or some, you know, these different teams like to do. You know, they're out there playing some games, they're close games, and they're meaningful games, and they'll be faced with those close games throughout the conference schedule. So I think that setup might be very good for Union. They've gotten very good goaltending from a sophomore, Corey Milan, who split time last year. Now he's the guy, and he's got a lot of potential, and he's played well. Seemed to respond very well to being a number one type guy. And Union's allowed only 6 goals in their last 11-plus periods. So that's, you know, that's a pretty good ratio of if you keep that rate up, you're going to win a lot of hockey games. We have not deteriorated.
No, I know.
You were talking about you were impressed by Minnesota when I talked to you last week, Gladdy.
I am.
I was going to shout out Minnesota, too. I don't know how they're going to finish. I don't know what kind of team they're going to be. You know, if they're going to end up right now, they're what? I mean, they're top five in all the polls. And I don't know if they're going to maintain that throughout the rest of the year, but I don't know that there's going to be a more entertaining team to watch than Minnesota. I mean, they're a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I love their quickness up front. I don't think you ever get a break. You don't get that half second or that time to breathe, or if you're a defenseman, that time to look up ice and, you know, maybe try to spring a forward. You've got a guy on you real quick, and that to me is what was most impressive about the Gophers so far.
For a team that loses so many underclassmen early, Don Lucia always likes to talk about his juniors and seniors being the key to things. That was driven home a couple years ago when he had freshmen named Phil Kessel and Blake Wheeler and didn't bring either of them to media day. He put, you know, three seniors up at the podium. Well, you're seeing in Ryan Stoa this year kind of that being played out. I mean, Stoa with two goals the other night against Minnesota, and as much young talent as the Gophers have, it really is these upperclassmen that are going to have to lead the way and going to have to make the difference. You know, Stoa with two goals, Baraball with a goal and assist as they win at Wisconsin. Those are the guys that are going to make the difference in the long run, as good as the young guys are.
Yeah. Yeah, they're. I mean, look at this roster, all the NHL draft picks on there. And that doesn't count Jordan Schrader.
No, who's a pretty darn good player, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Real good.
And, you know, and it was mentioned in the power rankings, too. The schedule works in their favor. I mean, they don't get on a plane until November 21st. They've got, you know, a ton of home games in a row here. They've got a pseudo-road game Saturday night at the Xcel Energy Center against Minnesota State. You know, then they go to Denver later in November and then come home, Michigan, Michigan State, Colorado College, Brown, you know, possibly Northeastern. So, you know,
ooh,
you're looking at a team that's
a game right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a pretty good game. I might have to make a point of stopping by the old Mariucci Arena.
Well, if form holds, which it has not always.
No, not in that tournament.
That tournament, so.
And it usually produces a yawner or three.
Yeah,
I covered Northern Michigan and Harvard playing to a 0-0 tie a couple years ago in that tournament. So, yeah, that was a bit of a yawner.
Oh, was that 2 years? I think 2 years ago when I went, we went actually, and wasn't that the Tyler Hirsch experience?
Yeah, I think it was.
That was the last straw. That was the last chapter in that book.
That's right. That was the Tyler Hirsch farewell tour.
Yeah.
What happened with that one?
No, he just had a complete no-show in the first game of the Mariucci Classic, and talking to some folks close to the team after the game, one of them said, our line chart will look a little different tomorrow. That was all they would say.
Yeah, it was.
And by the next day, Tyler Hirsch was an ex-college hockey player.
Yep.
Yeah. He just didn't come to the rink?
He was uninvited to come to the rink, let's say.
I don't know, for the first game. Or was he in the lineup and just...
No, he was in the lineup and just...
He was there physically. You know, let's put it that way.
Kind of skated circles, you know, between the blue lines and just didn't really seem to have much interest in playing the game.
It was like...
Was that last season?
That was 2 seasons ago.
That was 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't last season. He looked like he was skating figure skating compulsories.
Gotcha.
It was pretty.
No, you're right. His last season was when he went to the camp with the Minnesota Wild, and then had that notable blow up with them.
Yeah, that was another moment.
Oh yeah, that was against Alabama Huntsville Bus.
Yes, it was.
Gophers with 48 shots on goal.
Yeah.
I sat through that one. Unbelievable.
Mark Narduzzi in goal for the Chargers, and the coach's great quote afterwards was, Boy, he's been brutal all year, but he held us in tonight.
Man. By the
or
way,
something
that,
to that effect.
That Huntsville team ended up, didn't they end up making the NCAA tournament?
I think they may have that year.
Yeah, they played Notre Dame, right?
Fifth seed, yeah. Nothing. No, how did we had no idea they were on the verge of greatness.
That's right.
I was
and if we knew we'd never see Tyler again, we probably would have said more after the game. But
well,
yeah.
But I don't know, I like Minnesota. I like the watching them. I know that.
Yeah, I do too. Have you changed your phone number yet, Jess?
Doug Woog's exact words were, "I had taken my name out of the phone book." Who uses phone books anymore? But whatever. got some good-natured ribbing from the FSN crew for my pick of North Dakota as seventh. And boy, I'm not one to say I told you so after four games. But having seen North Dakota a couple weeks ago, I think that team will be okay, but just okay.
Yeah, they'll be okay.
Yep.
And okay doesn't get you very far in that league.
No.
It's the bottom line.
They host Wisconsin this weekend. I was talking with my friends who do North Dakota radio. When was the last time North Dakota and Wisconsin got together at a combined 1-8-1?
Well, when was the last time they played and neither team was ranked?
Yeah.
When's the last time a team was desperate in late October?
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you pick the more desperate team in that one? Oh, boy.
I think it's got to be Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I think it definitely does, because their schedule is, I mean, let's face it, the way they started the season, or the schedule that they had, it's just been ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
no
BC, UNH, out east, then they go to Denver, then they get Minnesota at home, and now they go to North Dakota. That's no way to start the season, especially if your team's you know slow to get out of the gate or scuffling a little bit.
And with the notion that Wisconsin's not going to do what they did last year and sneak into the NCAAs, not sneak into the NCAAs. The computer said they belong there, but they're not going to get into the NCAAs with a below 500 record anymore. That just is not going to happen. Well, if you come home from Grand Forks at 0-7-1, that's a real, real big hole to dig out of.
Yes, it is.
Just to get above 500. I mean, they're facing some real lean times if things don't turn around in a big hurry.
Well, speaking of Alabama Huntsville and holiday tournaments, the Chargers will be at the Badger Showdown this year, along with Lake Superior State and Harvard. So, there you go.
Interesting field. That will be Harvard's third game, won't it?
Yeah. Harvard's calling it the icebreaker.
Speaking of Harvard, Teddy Donato is going to be inducted into the Massachusetts Hockey Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And if his team finishes in the top six of ECAC hockey this year, he will be inducted again next year. that's the team that's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, they seem to have a lot of answers, and then things happened over the summer, and now they have a lot of questions. There's some talent there, for sure. They're going to count on some freshmen to play big roles. They're going to have to find a goalie. But that's a team, like you say, they could finish anywhere from first to 10th in ECAC hockey, which is crazy. So, they'll be... There'll be one to watch, I should say.
I agree. Interesting team.
Yeah. You know, if they're going to end up like, I don't know. I wouldn't even compare them to anybody, but they're going to be one of those teams that's going to have some wins that you're just going to say, like, what? how did they win that game? You know, and then they're going to have a bunch of weekends when, you know, you look at them and you say, well, yeah, they got nothing, you know, against Brown and Yale or whatever, I mean, you want to look at. But, I don't know. That's why they play them, and that's why we watch them.
Unfortunately, they don't play them until Thanksgiving, but...
Yeah. Deterioration, anybody? Anybody?
I really have
Halloween costumes?
I'm going to wear a noose and call myself a stockbroker. I'll make sure to make an appearance in Boston's financial district that night.
People may not recognize it as a costume.
Well, you could wear a noose and a chest protector, and you could go as Jason Veritek.
Oh, just hilarious!
I spent $150,000 on my costume. I'm going as a hockey mom.
What are the kids being, Jess?
Kids?
Oh, I got gambling money.
We got gambling money.
Well, yeah, what are the kids going?
You know, call me a bad dad. I don't even know.
You are horrible father.
I got the big bag of candy at Sam's Club. I've done my part.
Man, Flavor Flav is a better father than you.
Apparently more productive, too.
Yeah. I'm getting an email from Sean Kemp that says, shame on you.
Plus, said the kid.
Said the kid's going as a Cinderella.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. Either that or... it was either that or...
Ty Domi?
Nope, she's got more teeth than Ty.
That's right.
What was the other choice? And it was all very princess related. The princess theme was she kind of locked in on that very early on.
Gotcha.
So, although I was worried because she, not I, she went to see High School Musical 3 this weekend. And so I was worried we were going to have a late shift to High School Musical 3 character. But no, Cinderella won out.
Good.
And
good.
I...
Timeless. Timeless.
Yeah, exactly. And I couldn't name a High School Musical 3 person, so...
Interesting you bring that up, Bus. My kids went to see High School Musical 3 last night. There's apparently a character in all three of the High School Musical movies that carries a basketball with him everywhere he goes. In all three movies, he's a huge basketball guy. My son came home last night. He actually got a little pouch and has vowed to carry a puck with him everywhere he goes from now on. So, any of you college recruiters out there?
You got a pouch?
Kid who's
like a kangaroo?
Dedicated. No, just like a little, you know, satchel thing.
It's not a purse.
A junior size.
Kid's not carrying a purse.
That's
a junior
satchel.
Man purse. A European carry-all.
Exactly.
I gotta give a shout out to my boss, not only for being a good guy, but for a real kind of made me laugh. I sent an email to him yesterday asking for a couple days off to go deer hunting. His email response was, "You'll shoot your eye out."
There you go.
Why? What's that from?
Oh, come on.
Oh, really? Come on, Gladdy.
Do you even turn on a TV?
Yeah.
Wow.
I watch hockey.
Even when there's no hockey on Christmas Day? Christmas Story?
I've seen that movie a good 200 times.
Never seen it.
Oh, it's a good
movie.
Wow. Well, whoever gets Gladdy in the Secret Santa poll knows what to get him.
It's probably...
another movie I'll throw in the garbage.
No, it's really good.
I was busy watching Running Man again. It's the best movie ever.
What?
You got the Maria Conchita Alonso DVD collection?
Yeah.
The box set.
The commentary on that.
Unreleased interviews with Richard Dawson.
The commentary on that is horrible. Just Arnold, yeah, I'm running. Here I'm running.
Jesse Ventura's in that, isn't he?
Everybody's
no,
in
I think
that.
That's Predator.
Yes, he is.
Isn't that Predator?
No, he has a brief role in Running Man.
He's got a prominent role in Running Man. It's like Captain Justice or whatever.
Captain Justice.
He comes out of retirement.
There were a couple of weeks when he was governor of Minnesota that he insisted on being called that, too. That was kind of the beginning of the end.
Your vote. Your state.
Did he name Gorilla Monsoon lieutenant governor?
Jimmy Hart, the mouth of the South.
Mean Gene was comptroller.
I have a good friend who grew up in Alabama who, you know, laughs about Jesse Ventura. I sent her the email a couple days ago when Charles Barkley said he's definitely running for governor of Alabama. And said, yeah, who's laughing now?
I would vote for Sir Charles any day of the week.
Charles actually had a great quote, though, because he said... He said, there's no way I can screw up Alabama. We're already 48th in everything, and Mississippi and Arkansas aren't going anywhere.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's outstanding.
I tune into his State of the State speech.
I tune into his State of the Breakfast speech.
That's terrible.
Gold.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
He's the most watchable person on television.
No doubt. No doubt.
Unfortunately, he's associated with NBA, so therefore I don't watch.
That's terrible.
You just DVR only the Barkley segments. That'll be all right.
Yeah.
Scary Halloween joke. Ready?
No, but go ahead.
Why did the vampires cancel their baseball game? They couldn't find their bats. There you go. Halloween joke. All right, we're going to wrap this up.
About,
it's far too late.
About 45 seconds too late.
Yeah.
This podcast has lasted almost as long as the sixth inning of Game 5 of the World Series.
That is true. Bud Selig is our leader.
Would this be our own personal 10-minute overtime?
Yeah, it will. It's our platform. All right, thanks for listening to an Inside College Hockey podcast.
Vote for Obama.
Wow.
Mr. Subliminal.
Make sure you exercise your right to vote.
For someone under 50, maybe, I don't know.
It's illegal to vote for someone under 50. They can't run, right?
No,
it has to be like 35.
Yeah, 35 is the age.
Yeah.
I'll be 35 someday.
Not at your age, you're not going to be.
All right. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll talk to you again soon.